And you're going to talk not only with me, but Dr. David Jacobs. So that's next on Coast to Coast AM. David, did you ever look into the Travis Walton case? Curious to see what your take is on that one.
Well, I when the Travis Walton case first came about, which was around 1975, I told my my friend Alan Hynek that, oh, I thought that case was a hoax. It just didn't add up to me. There was something wrong with it. I didn't like it, and all that. That was wrong.
That was wrong, huh?
Yeah, no, I think that this is a legitimate case. I think that Travis Walton is an extremely intelligent and well-spoken person, and very impressive. I just think that he's an abductee, and this is an abduction experience. The problem with the case was that all that's come out has just been really a few minutes of his 5-day event. I think he only remembered about 20 minutes and didn't want to do hypnosis and all that. I asked him, you know, like, why not just do it, you know, and it was apparently it's too much for him and it is for a lot of people. And the question is for everybody, is do you really want to know or not know? And for a lot of people, the best answer is not know. I did have occasion myself to do a 5-day event with a woman who lives within 100 miles of me, and we did eight sessions, each one about 3 hours long, on what happened. So I have 24 hours of testimony from her, as opposed to 20 minutes from Travis, in terms of what he remembered. So there is a big difference, and when somebody's abducted for 4 days or 5 days or 2 days or whatever it is, there's that much worth of stuff that happens. And so it takes them a long time to sort of sort it out and tell you what goes on a sort of hour-by-hour basis.
What kind of people get abducted, David?
Well, every kind. The only thing that they have in common is that they're abductees. It cuts across all races, all ethnic groups, all religions, all national boundaries, all economic groups, all educational levels, all everything. The one thing they do have in common is that their mother or their father was an abductee. I'm dealing with one person right now whose father is 82, and who's an abductee, who was the abductee, and he remembers both his mother and his father had told stories of all sorts of bizarre things, which was very difficult for them to understand, but which we now listen to and realize is probably abduction material. And it goes back up in his family to about the 1890s, and we can trace it back with a relative degree of certainty to the 1890s. I think that's where most things point. And I think that's when it started as well. And it might have been related, and I can't tell you this for sure, but it might have been related to the mystery airship wave of 1896, 1897. But it might actually have gone back a little bit further than that. Then we lose sight of it almost completely. And so I do think that it started then, and there's other ways in which you can measure when this phenomenon began other than that, just, you know, through family stories. The key element here is the fact that it's intergenerational. That means that if you are an abductee, all your children will be abductees and all their children will be abductees, mm-hmm. regardless of who you have the kids with, whether they're abductees or non-abductees. And if that is the case, then what you're going to see is a cone-like sort of spreading out in the society, and over the long haul, eventually, sort of like a virus or something, everybody will be an abductee. Now, there are arguments being made for or against that, but it's reasonable to assume that that could happen over a long enough period of time. And the question is, well, how long? Well, of course, it depends on if it starts with two people or if they have a population. Let's just say if 2 million, they're going to start with, or 200,000 or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you're sort of reasonable about it all, let's just say it'll take between 7 and 10 generations. I mean, let's just say a generation is 25 years for everybody to be an abductee. It's sort of like it increases exponentially.
Can we, as abductees, stop what's happening to us? Not that I am one, but I mean, can they stop it?
We cannot stop it, but just to dot the I on the last sentence, the point is that if this phenomenon started with the ancient Egyptians or in biblical times, by the year 200 A.D.,
mm-hmm.
everybody would have been an abductee in the world.
Right.
Or by the year even 3000 B.C., everybody would have been an abductee in the world. And if it started in the 15th century, everybody would be an abductee. We know that only about, maybe between 2 and 7% of the population are abductees. So it's consistent with the 1890s, once again, you see. Now, the question then is, can you stop it? Well, first of all, people don't even know what's going on, so it's really tough to stop it. So we can't stop it in aggregate. We cannot put the brakes on it because we found a magic potion, and if we just inoculate everybody, that'll be it. But the question is, can we stop it for an individual person? Well, with enough resources and enough talent and enough ways of doing it, yes, we can. We can stop it for an individual person. Their entire world would boil down to stopping it. They wouldn't have a life. They would have to, as one woman did once, tie themselves up with string all night long and tie themselves to the bedpost and have cameras trained on them morning, noon, and night and wear special clothes. And yes, if you wanted to do that, you could, in fact, stop abductions, but you'd also stop your life. So the answer is, if you want to have a normal life, then we cannot stop the abduction.
Just let it happen.
Right. Now, this is an area where we need to have people who are really, really good in this kind of thought processes put their heads together and come up with some strategies, and we don't have that. So it's an area that I'm actually I think that that we might be able to stop it for certain people in a much easier way. For example, there's a guy named Michael Persinger up at Laurentian University in Sudbury, Ontario, and he's dedicated to showing that the abductions are just a matter of temporal lobe instability. And he attaches electrodes to people's skulls, and he turns on the juice, and once in a while, not all the time, once in a while, they get a feeling that they're floating or they feel there's a presence around. And he says, aha, you see, I've solved the abduction phenomenon. Now, but the point is that this is a telepathic community we're dealing with here, and they control people through neurological manipulation from distance. They don't have to attach electrodes to people's skulls. They can just do it from a matter of feet or yards or whatever it is. And so the question then is, how can we prevent that from happening? Well, there's a guy named Mike Mencken who's on the right track. He makes these sort of soft leather helmets, and he puts various barriers inside them, polyurethane or whatever it is, and he thinks that he's been able to stop it. Now, they look sort of like World War I flying helmets, so it's not like you can wear them out of the house or anything like that. But he's on the right track, and what we need to know is we know which brain waves will hit an electrode that's placed on your head because for an EEG, but we don't know if you put a barrier between the electrode and the various waves, which ones will stop at the barrier. We've never done any research, as far as I know, to show, not which electrodes, but which brain waves will stop at the barrier. We don't know which ones can be stopped. And if we could find, in fact, a proper way of stopping the entrance of brain waves into the head, or waves of any sort into the head, then we might, for a period of time, be able to stop abductions through this kind of headgear thing. It sounds crazy, and maybe they'd have to wear a visor and all, who knows what, maybe they have to wear a hazmat suit or something. But I think that's a way that actually shows promise, and all I need is a couple of $1 million and a couple of 100 people to work on it,
and it's done.
Maybe we could stop it happening to one person.
Let's take some calls. First-time caller line, you're on with Dr. David Jacobs. Hi.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
My name's Barbara. I'm calling from Santa Fe.
Okay, Barbara.
And my question is, and somewhat related to what you were just speaking of, can one protect themselves from becoming an abductee? And can an animal, such as a dog, detect such an invasion into a home?
The answer is no and yes. One cannot protect oneself from becoming an abductee because it is intergenerational, and people are abducted when they are babies and when they are 1 and 2 and 3 years old and on up. And they might remember one from age 12, you know, might stick in their mind consciously, and that's when they say that they first had abductions. But invariably, their abduction started in infancy because we know that through mothers and fathers who are abducted with their babies. So the best thing to do is not to be born to somebody who is an abductee, and then it won't happen to you. Dogs and cats are handled very, very quickly. They are put to sleep right away. In other words, when there's an abduction event, a dog will not react properly. He might start to bark and then is immediately quieted and then goes directly to sleep. Same thing with cats. There's an interesting story that I had once. This woman who I've been working with loves cats, and she's had cats for years and years and years. And there's this one cat had a sort of obsession with doors. Every time he closed the door, it started to scratch at the door. And so if he went to the bathroom, he'd be scratching at the bathroom door. You went outside, he'd be scratching you outside. If he goes outside, the first thing he does, he turns around and starts scratching at the door to come back in. Well, she was abducted many, 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 many times. And one time, she was in her bedroom, and the cat was in there, and these beings came in directly through the wall, which is not unusual, and took her out directly through the wall also. And then the next morning, she noticed, she didn't even know that there was an abduction. It was totally gone from her mind. But she noticed that her cat was scratching at the wall.
Jeez.
Where she's so worried the cat saw these beings entering.
They know.
Yeah. So dogs and cats do react, yes.
Wildcard line, welcome to the program. You're on with David Jacobs. Hi there.
Hello, George. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
Okay, I just have you kind of answered my question. I was going to tell them, you know, why the people that are abducted repeatedly, especially, wanted to, you know, put cameras on their clothes or whatever. But he kind of answered that. But why wouldn't you just put it in your bedroom, have it hidden? And then, you know, you can actually catch this if it really did happen. And while you're abducted, if you're actually in this spacecraft, why don't you do something as simple as scratching your nails against the examining, the table that you're on, and try to pick up something under your nails, because they're doing it forensics all the time.
Yeah, these are two excellent questions. The first one was the first thing we tried, actually, years and years and years ago. I ran down for the first time in 1986. And put a camera in somebody's bedroom and pointed it at her bed. And the first thing that I noticed was that the frequency of abductions began to decline. Then I noticed that she had a T120 tape in her video camera, which lasted for 6 hours. And so she'd go to sleep at 12, and at 6:05, there'd be an abduction event. Or she would decide to go to bed at 10, and then between 10 and 12, there'd be an abduction event. So then I started using T160 tapes, which lasts for 8 hours. Then what would happen is she would say, oh, I don't need to turn that tape recorder on tonight. Nothing is going to happen. And then followed by an abduction event. Or she would just decide to sleep in the, I'll sleep in the living room on the couch tonight, you know, where there is no tape recorder. And then followed by an abduction. So we sort of play cat and mouse with a whole bunch of people like this, and then I have tapes of them at 3 o'clock in the morning, for example, getting up out of bed, walking over to the tape recorder and turning it off, and followed by abduction. I have tapes of them getting up and walking out of the room. So we learned pretty quickly that this kind of low-tech world is not going to work. Now, if you do it surreptitiously against their knowledge, then you run into ethical problems. because you're in their bedroom, let's just say, and this is they'd have to know it. They'd have to sign off on it, and if they know it, then our special friends would know it as well. And so, however, we're optimistic about this too, and there are, I know, I think that this is still the way to go, and I think that with better technology now, we might be able to get something in the future. But you know, the question is, these days, you know, what you're looking for is we were looking for aliens because an alien would be important. In fact, a large percentage of the abductions that I hear about in today's world are done by hybrids. So you just see...
That's interesting.
You just see people walking in and the abductee walking out with them if that's what they're going to do, walk. And so it's more complicated and more difficult, but boy, it's certainly something that I want, I'll tell you that.
So where do you think they're coming from, David? One planetary system or numerous ones?
Well, you know, that's really a terrific question, and the answer is even more terrific. We don't know where they're from. Now, people said, well, they're from another planet, and that's probably true. People said that they're probably from another dimension, and that might be true. They're maybe from another parallel universe, and that might be true also. And the answer is it doesn't matter. It's of no concern. They are not from here. They have a different agenda. They are not human. They represent an advanced technology from not this planet. That's the key thing. Now, here's the kicker, so to speak. Back in the 1950s, when contactees, mainly charlatans, would talk about how they dance with aliens, they'd meet an alien in their backyard, and the alien say, "Well, my name is Vortec, and I come from the planet Quatsec, and we come because you're, you know, exploding atomic bombs and screwing up the planetary system, whatever it is." We knew who they were, why they were here, and where they were from. In the first sentence, usually, you know. And if not the first sentence, certainly the first paragraph or right away. In the abduction phenomenon after, and I've looked at 1,000 different abduction events now, over 1,000. And my colleague, Bud Hopkins, has looked at God knows how many. We still do not know where they are because out in the sky, up there in the firmament, there's one hell of a lot of planets or suns or stars. We assume, and as the evidence seems to be pointing, that most stars, maybe not most, but many, have planetary systems around them. And you know, there's billions of stars up there, and we know that lots of those stars have names, like Sirius or whatever. And we know that most of them have a lot of them have numbers. Most of them don't have anything. So when you're pointing out that you have the possibility of coming from in our immediate area, billions of other suns, that it may not be possible, if they are from another planet, to tell us where they are from. Because they may not know what we call it, and they may not know the number that we have for it, and the chances are very high that it doesn't have a number or a name at all. So they can't really, it may not be explainable to us. That may be possible. But that doesn't matter either. Nothing like that matters. The only thing that matters is they're not from here.
Stay with us. We'll be back with final phone calls. Our very special guest tonight, Dr. David Jacobs. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And we'll be back. We'll take final phone calls with David Jacobs in just a moment. We have some time remaining, but not a lot, where we're giving out two free Ds, the old Art Bell interviews with the late Father Malachi Martin, when you subscribe to the After Dark newsletter. A couple ways to do that. Call 1-888-727-5505 or simply go online at coasttocoastam.com. And back to the calls. This hour is going to go very fast. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with David Jacobs. Hi there.
Gene.
Keith, go ahead, sir.
Yes, I pray quietly in my mind to God through Jesus. I have been gifted with telepathy. Is it possible now that I may speak with aliens through telepathy?
Hmm. Well, all communication in the abduction phenomenon is, in fact, telepathic, except to the hybrids, which it can be both ways. But they're the ones who call the shots, and so they're the ones who make the decision as to who they're going to abduct next and all that. And, of course, they're only abducting abductees, which is sort of a circular statement. But unfortunately, we don't have much choice in the situation. That's the crux of the matter. They do things against our will. We can't really say no, and we haven't learned how to say no in spite of what some people think. And I mean, we don't have the power to do that. And so the answer is, well, maybe you can and maybe you can't, but they're the ones who make the decision.
Okay, thanks for the response. Thanks for the call. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi. Good to talk to you. My name's Louise, and I'm in the Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania area. And I wanted to know, how does someone rule out if they've had possibly something happen to them and they only are hearing bits and pieces that sort of sound partially familiar, but want to be sure that it's not that?
Which part of Pennsylvania did you say you come from?
I'm in the Lehigh Valley.
Oh, okay.
That's the eastern part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the only way you can do it really is through investigation. Now, having said that, that's an easy answer because a lot of people know that they're being abducted and they know it's been happening for years and years and years and you're never going to argue them out of it, and they're right. But for researchers, the only way that we can know, of course, is through investigation. The best, and there isn't, you've really touched on an awful problem. The problem is that there is no good way of investigating this phenomenon. There are so few people out there who know what they're doing in this research and who can give you sort of a good idea of what's happening to you that it's just, it's unreasonable to think for anyone in the country that they will be close enough to an abduction researcher who knows what he or she is doing and to find out what's going on. And the problem is that the number of abduction researchers has actually been shrinking over the years. So it's worse now than ever before. So the best thing that I do is I tell people, well, go to a psychologist who does hypnosis. And, of course, they charge money. And I've never charged anything for anything I do, and neither has my colleague, Bud Hopkins. But and they then would have to get in touch with me, and I can send them my materials for therapists, and I can help them to understand what's going on and how to do hypnosis. But other than that, people have tried and tried and tried to remember by themselves, and they'll remember bits and pieces of things. They'll remember distorted memories that they think are real, and they put them together into this kind of narrative that seems to make logical sense, and then they think that's what's happened to them, and then when they investigate it, they realize that's not what happened to them. It might be a lot stranger what happened to them, but the fact is, though, that you just need a competent researcher. Now, on my website, I have a questionnaire, and what you can do is fill out the questionnaire and mention that you talked with me, you know, and all that, and I might be able to get back to you if I can. I get so many of these questionnaires every day, and it's with my vast staff and my 30-story building, you know, and I just don't have the time for it all.
Okay, next up, let's go to east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast on the Air with us. Hi there.
This is Tim in Nashville.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for calling.
Hey, just a quick question. David, earlier I believe you said that once the abductions start, they happen in your entire lifetime. Have you ever met anybody that it just abruptly stopped and never happened again?
Well, I've had people who say that that has happened, that they did abruptly stop and it's never happened again. And the problem here is that even when they say that, they are not remembering perhaps the vast majority of abductions that already have happened to them. So by saying that they've abruptly stopped, I think to myself, well, did they fix your memory so that you just don't remember them anymore, or did they in fact stop? And the only way you can figure this out is by, once again, doing investigation and careful questioning about what their life has been like. It's hard to tell. I have had people who tell me that there's been no activity, but since skepticism is the best tool, it works both ways for abductions, and I'm skeptical even of that, you see, because I know that these beings, in my experience, that I, you know, with the people I've worked with, they really don't stop. This is a relentless kind of phenomenon. It's really awful. So the answer is I don't know. But I'm suspicious when people tell me that they haven't had any of it, that they've had all sorts of abduction activity and then it stopped. I'm suspicious.
Okay, thanks. Tell me about the International Center for Abduction Research.
Well, that includes, the board consists of Dave Jacobs and, maybe I can think of somebody else. I'm not sure.
You haven't appointed me yet to the board, have you?
Right.
Next up, let's go to our next wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Well, thank you. This is Richard, Dr. Richard. I'm in the central coast of California.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I've had two classic Coast to Coast experiences, but for time purposes, we're focusing on the first. And Dr. Jacobs, I had an experience I would call a spatial-time disruption. My best guess has been that it was us. I mean, our military or government. So maybe one question is: did we get some of this alien abduction technology with some of the crash sources? But what happened to me was I take off in a car near Immigrant's Pass, which is between Tecopa Hot Springs in California and Pahrump, Nevada. Yes, Art Bell territory. I'm there, gathered rocks. I'm with a friend. I'm not going to go into the full details. I take off in the car, and I wanted to show how fast I could drive. I knew the roads. So I'm going blast off 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I take off the car, there's gravel. I could hear as the car takes off and starts to kick. Then, all of a sudden, it feels like I'm at the top of a swing, and I'm like floating. It's almost like when you hyperventilate and you're losing consciousness and taking a breath. Everything seemed to go in slow motion backwards. The car silently moved backwards and ended up about 6 inches from where I took off. I remember thinking at the time, something is definitely happening. Of all the people I have with me, I have this guy with me, and I had a friend with me who claims he was an ex-CIA guy who had a head injury. Anyway, he was with me in the car. I said to him, something just happened. I'm not going to say what it was. What just happened? He goes, I don't know. I say, the car took off. We start taking off. All of a sudden, it just stopped and moved backwards, and we're like 6 inches from where we took off. He says, I just thought we moved backwards 6 inches. It ended up that we were in a 3/4 mile from where we were. I later found out. So my question is, do these abduction experiences, do they have any of these sort of sensations of like of dizziness, of like being on the top of a swing? Do you know something strange happening? And the other associated question, is it possible that some of our own military has got some of this technology?
Well, the first part of the question is, do people describe things like this kind of being on a swing and being dizzy and all of that stuff? And the answer is yes, but they'll describe that for any number of reasons. You have to remember that it doesn't necessarily mean abduction phenomenon. However, this is a situation with that has to be investigated. Now, normally when something like that happens, I would ask the person a whole series of questions about their lives and odd things that have happened in their lives, because since the abduction phenomenon is a lifelong business, you're going to find all sorts of odd anomalies in a person's life leading up to this sort of triggering event where the car, you know, did something. But in fact, people are abducted in cars all the time. They're abducted in car loads full of other people, and cars do feel like they're floating, and people, in other words, all this sort of stuff does happen. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it did happen to you. We don't really know that, because brain bubbles will do the same thing to a person, you know. So we just have to. This is one of those incidents that probably needs to be investigated, as opposed to just accepted as something that's indicative of abduction activity. Now, the other part does the government have technology? Well, once again, this is another world that I'm a fringe character in. In other words, I'm not in it. I'm off to the fringe, and that's the world of conspiracies and government and stuff. And I really hope they do. If they had the right technology, they could clean up the mess in Iraq pretty quick. They could have gotten Saddam before he got into his spider hole. They could have done a whole lot of things. But I just don't see it personally. If they did have technology, that means that they would know about the abduction phenomenon, they would know about aliens, and they would have huge studies going on about it, and they would be on top of the situation, and it is my fondest hope and dream that that is true.
Okay, thanks. Let's go next to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Shirley from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Shirley. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I did see you in Portland at Powell's Bookstore, by the way.
Okay, great.
I wanted to ask your guest if this is a possibility, that we hear a lot of your guests talking about this planet was seeded by other extraterrestrials mm-hmm. at one point in our early history, and also whether... Holy Man in India, there's a well-known Holy Man, was asked by this man, he said, are ETs real? Extraterrestrials real, and are they visiting Earth? And he said, yes, they are, and they have much work to do. So my point was, I got to thinking, well, are they, since these are reproduction-type abductions, could they possibly be seeding a planet knowing that there might be something happening to Earth in the near future?
All right, both good questions, Shirley.
Yeah, and you know, what you're talking about ultimately in terms of ancient times is what was called panspermia. And a lot of people thought that and was always dismissed as something totally ludicrous until... Francis Crick adopted the theory as a serious theory of Watson and Crick fame, who discovered the structure of DNA, and then suddenly scientists began to take more interest in it because, of course, he was a Nobel laureate, and there is more interest now in that, but now you're dealing with periods of time that deal with the formation of the Earth. You're dealing with billions of years back, so anything is possible, I suppose, in that regard, and all what that shows us is how we evolved over the years, but it doesn't really shed light necessarily on the abduction phenomenon. What it does say, however, is that. I'm going to make a different kind of argument now. I'm going to take what you said and just sort of transpose it a little bit. A lot of people think that we are the only life in the universe, and I think you can make a legitimate and serious argument that we are the only life in the universe. I think it's a dumb argument, but it's a legitimate and a serious argument. I think it can be made. But you can't make an argument that there's only two species in the universe, us and another species somewhere, let's say the aliens or whatever. That is an argument that cannot be made. If you make that argument, you are automatically making the argument that the universe is populated with God knows how many other aliens out there. There can be one, but there can't be two. Two means millions, billions maybe. But one is a legitimate argument. So panspermia suggests that there's life everywhere, and that's sort of the idea. You see that we were sprinkled with through meteors or whatever it was through some sort of cells or protocells that ultimately evolved into life here, and that would mean that there's life throughout the universe, and that was sort of what panspermia was about. And, of course, everything that we've learned about the universe in the past 20 years has pointed to the idea of life, including just last week, the water formation
on Mars. Sure. Well, interesting story, too. I was on with Richard Hoagland a couple nights ago. There's an investigation going on now within NASA where they believe that out of JPL, they have withheld information from the public. I don't know what the information is. We don't know, David, but the fact that they would hold it back is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, well, once again, when they withhold information, you know, but you, as soon as you can't really begin to think about it in terms of the reality of the information that you already know. What you know is that you don't know what the information is.
Exactly. That is what you know. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Take it away.
Hey, I got a question for your guest, George.
Okay.
Why would such an advanced race from any part of the universe or dimension, why would they go through so much time and trouble over and over and over and so on and so forth so many times? Why would they need to do that so often?
In terms of coming here, abducting us, things like that?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, you know, the answer to that is this business about this change that's going to take place and making these sort of human-looking hybrids. I do think that this is an integration program, and I do think that ultimately, because they can control us and we can't control them, that this is a program that, and I hate to even use these terms, that this could be a colonization or a takeover program or however you want to put it. But I do think that the evidence inexorably points to that, to my embarrassment. But the question is, well, okay, let's just say it does point to that. And the question then is, why would they do that? And we do not know the answer to that. That is the ultimate question.
You know, David, you look at this planet from afar. We're a warmongers as a society in whole. We kill each other. You know, if I were an extraterrestrial, sophisticated, and had the ability to alter and genetically change, I would be doing it to us.
Well, it could be that. It's possible, although why would they care? Who, you know,
maybe they're all benevolent. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, and maybe it's some sort of geopolitical situation that we don't understand, that relates to other planets or whatever. Maybe, you know, maybe it's a matter of resources. Maybe, you know, in economics, in the old traditional way, there might be a lot of different reasons why they would want to do this that we're not aware of. But the fact that we're not aware of it is really bizarre, because once again, if this were psychological, everybody would invent the reason why they're doing it. I mean, naturally. But in fact, nobody knows. Absolutely nobody knows. And there's been a lot of stuff about, oh, it's the environment and we're screwing up the world and all the rest of that stuff. Well, that's all sort of new. And this has been going on for over 100 years, and we've got cases going back that we've looked at from the 30s and so forth. And environmental stuff was not real big in those days, you know, and we never heard anything about it then. So we just don't know the answer to it.
David, I've already sent a note to our publisher to, start the balls rolling for your new book, and I will pass your personal information on to my friend, the psychiatrist, who truly would like to do more of what you're doing, okay?
Well, thank you, George. I appreciate it.
All right, my friend. David Jacobs, Dr. David Jacobs. I'll be back in a moment now. 2 hours of open lines, special hotline opened up to those of you who have been visited by the devil or by angels. We're on both ends of the spectrum tonight on Coast to Coast AM.